How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, December 20th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello. I'm here.
And I am glad you're here. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Kelly. Good to be here.
I'm glad to hear it. Now, the first thing we have to talk about is a very easy thing to understand why we want to talk about it. So, Charlotte, our first topic is Apple and satellites.
Space. That's why I'm here.
Yes.
Space.
Tell us all about it.
So, yeah. Apparently, Apple is building or has been building a top secret team to develop satellite communications technology. The story came from Bloomberg. I wrote it up for us. So it seems like quite a serious team. It's apparently got the backing of Tim Cook. It's led by former Google execs called Michael Treller and John Fenwick. And they've kind of been hiring people who are very well regarded in the industry and looking to hire more engineers. The interesting thing about this is not just that Apple want to make satellites and Apple want to do space, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is what Apple might do with satellite technology. So first of all, we don't know if it's just it's developing technology that would allow it to interact with existing satellite constellations, mm-hmm. or if it's actually going to launch its own satellites.
So software versus hardware. Are they building their own or just using what's out there already?
Right.
Okay.
Or, you know, a combination of the two, whatever. We don't know because there's no products yet.
Right.
What could be happening is that Apple want to use this kind of technology as a way to bypass existing carriers. Mm-hmm. So Apple would use these satellites to send data directly to your device.
One thing I think that will be interesting to Brian about this is, you know, talking about beaming to devices, is what device that might be. So,
right.
Brian, the one that I think of that I think would get your attention is automobiles.
GPS was the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah.
There's no need for Apple to reinvent the GPS wheel. And there's a lot of reasons for Apple not to reinvent the GPS wheel. Being part of the existing GPS technology, protocol, spectrum, network, the whole thing has probably a whole lot of benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And inventing its own way to do it, unless they're bringing something revolutionary to the market, the expense of that, I don't think it would be for GPS. I think it's much more likely to be for wireless carrying, I should say, and then probably also wireless data.
Mm,
and if Apple can bypass the entire of the global wireless industry, it's going to be revolutionary. It's going to be incredibly disruptive. I mean, it's going to just hurt the entire industry. Because, you know, Apple customers tend to spend more on their stuff. It would be a significant chunk of the wireless industry's business, even though the wireless industry's business is certainly made up of a majority of Android devices and then even feature phones still. But it would take a very profitable segment of the wireless industry's business.
Mm.
And plus possibly broadband. Right?
Yeah.
It could in the States, it could poop on Comcast and AT&T and all the cable providers, all of the other existing current broadband providers, the regional providers, it could really a lot of folks, and then hopefully in the process, of course, offer us superior service.
I want to throw another thing into the mix as well. One of the execs that was hired is someone called Ashley Moore Williams. She came from... so there's her, but another person is called Daniel Ellis. So, and he came from Netflix. And he was part of the team that oversaw the streaming services content delivery network.
Okay.
Now, could Apple be using this to help improve the way it delivers Apple TV Plus, for instance?
I wonder about that. That was one thing I wondered about.
Going in the mix.
Yeah, when I heard they hired someone from Netflix, that was one thing I thought about. Another thing that crossed my mind when Brian was talking about bypassing wireless carriers might be if you live in a place where... I know what I'm trying to say, but I might not be able to do it very well. If you live someplace where perhaps the government has more control over cellular service than you like, maybe you can just get service from Apple. Or yesterday, well, talking
those countries probably aren't going to allow that, Kelly.
Yeah, surely if you've got that stringent, you're not going to allow.
That's true. Or
not going to allow an Apple carrier service.
There's various values of allow. I mean, we know there are lots of people behind the Great Firewall who manage to make it out occasionally. So maybe that's an option, or maybe places where there isn't service or it's not very good. This is a way that Apple can sort of fall back on that.
How about in markets where the surveillists are, where, you know, Comcast wants to sell our browsing history to advertisers? In markets where the surveillance enemy isn't the government but rather corporations, Apple could have a significant privacy competitive advantage by offering something like this.
Yeah. And Brian, I laughed when you said Comcast, because I think it's really funny. It would be really entertaining if that were exactly what it was some sort of broadband providing technology that they were working on, because I think it would be really entertaining that Apple finally got completely out of networking, killed airport hardware and all of that stuff, and then gets into service providing. I thought that was funny. And that would be a service. That's the thing we know Apple's really in love with right now, would be services. The other thing I was thinking of, Brian, when you talked about broadband, was maybe messages. Like, if your messages are blue, it's all handled by Apple servers or something like that, you know? It's just a thing that sort of crossed my mind. I don't have much more speculation on it than that, but that seems like, you know, making their platform even more secure seems like a pretty good thing in Apple's wheelhouse.
Capturing even more of the money that is being traded about within Apple's ecosystem is something I think that's very attractive to Apple. Phil Schiller has said that Apple wants to be at the center of where we spend our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, clearly having data is a place where a whole lot of us spend a whole lot of our lives.
Yeah.
And Apple being able to get that money instead of a myriad of providers would obviously has major potential for Apple's bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be too trite about this, but it obviously moves very much in terms of the services element that Apple have been trying to build over the last year. Mm-hmm. We know they want to provide more that isn't just iThings, right?
Yeah.
So that is also an interesting element to this, because Brian is right, absolutely right, to mention the kind of revenue stream this could provide. But also, it just might be a classic Apple thing of wanting to provide the whole stack, right? You're wanting to control the whole ecosystem. It could really come down to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really think about that, the privacy message that, you know, get your broadband or get your wireless data from us, and we're not going to trade it with anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah.
Could be really compelling.
Yeah, that's part of our discussion yesterday about, like, you know, what value of location data is it that people are sharing, and how does that compare with what they think they're actually sharing? And, you know, it came back to Facebook. Don't be surprised. Sorry, you know, sorry if that caught you unawares.
Shock.
But that was, like, that's part of what I'm wondering with this is whatever, I feel like whatever it is they're doing, you know, whether it's something that we've talked about already or have not talked about or even considered, is that it's going to be something that I think is going to fall into that, like, you know, you have, like, this is the situation now, but if you do it with us, then, you know, if Apple has your data, we're not going to do anything with it. And I would be much happier with that situation, to be honest, because Apple's very upfront about how they want money from me. They want me to pay them for music. They want me to pay them for television. They want me to pay them for iCloud storage. They want me to pay them for phones and computers and wheels for those computers and, you know, everything else. And that's where, and because I'm paying them the money that I'm paying them, there's the other stuff that they throw in for free, like being able to use messages and things like that. And that's what I wonder. That's what I wonder what this is going to be, whatever it is. I feel like the security piece of it is a huge part of why this is what they're doing. It seems like making it upstream is, like, you know, being the provider of that particular service is going to make it more reliable for them and more in their control. We know they like that. Right, right, Brian?
Apple likes control.
Yeah.
For sure.
End to end. Yeah. If you get a chance, find an old school Mac user over the holidays and ask them about Apple clones. If you want to hear a story about what happens when Apple doesn't control everything. It's a very entertaining story.
I wonder what Apple bring to the market in terms of, like what does it have a team doing? Because it sure seems like it would be the easiest thing in the world for Apple to throw a few billion dollars at any of a myriad of satellite companies throw up its own network of satellite dishes.
Right. So apparently what those two guys who I mentioned earlier, in the kind of first year and a half they were at Apple, they were basically trying to answer the question you just asked, Brian. They were looking at kind of how feasible it is for Apple to develop satellite technology and, you know, kind of exploring possible use cases and stuff, I believe, as well.
So they found there wasn't a solution for them already, and so now they're doing it themselves?
Well, I think the focus of the first 18 months or whatever was the feasibility of developing satellite technology. Now, I don't think Apple would be making the hires it is making and developing this team with the backing of Tim Cook unless they thought there was something there.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Well, don't forget, too, that one of Apple's central premises that it was true under Steve Jobs and has remained true under Tim Cook is that if Apple is going to enter a market, they need to control something that basically keeps other people from directly copying them. Mm-hmm. There's some element of the device or product or service that only they control. Mm-hmm. Yeah, through patents or through, like, you know, in the case of Apple TV Plus, it would be just actually paying for its own content. Right. For the case of Apple Music, it would be even simply controlling and curating all the music. Same thing for the App Store, et cetera. For the iPhone, there are all kinds of technologies that Apple alone controls that go into its iPhone. So if it's going to do the satellite thing, they're most likely, unless Tim has abandoned that principle, there has to be something that Apple thinks that it can control and makes it worthwhile to make this investment.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is controlling that maybe there's just nothing that currently does what they want to do. And maybe another part of it is they don't want anyone else to be able to get into it. I could see that kind of being a thing. Not necessarily for control reasons, but for security reasons. Like, we can't 100% promise that if we're using existing satellite constellations and just sort of renting time on them, those are something that we can't 100% guarantee that people can't, that nobody else can get into that. So that's not secure in our opinion. So we need our own. Difficult to say. If you have any ideas on this, please let us know. You can get to us at observations@macobserver.com. You can leave comments in the show notes, and you can talk to us at TMO Daily on Twitter. And as you may have noticed, we occasionally dip into the listener mailbag, and we might feature your message on our show. Our other topic today is we want to talk a little bit about bug bounties. Now, Charlotte, this was another thing that we've talked about before, but now is officially in place.
Yes. So in August, Apple said that the top you could earn from in its bug bounty program, which, remember, Apple was underpaid for a long time and kind of didn't really have a bug bounty program into the same level that lots of other companies did. They put that up, the cap, to 1 million, but actually it was 1.5 million because if you found a bug in a beta, you could get up to 50% more. That program came to life today. It's $1.5 million is the top end you can now earn from Apple, which is pretty significant amount of money. There's obviously different levels and prices depending on the kind of bug you find. Apple has laid out exactly the type of thing it wants people to look for. It's really focused on kind of novel and unique issues that it wants you to raise. Obviously, it would prefer it if you found those in beta, hence the kind of little bonus on top if you do that before they get to the public. There's a few quite strict rules. You can't make the bug public until Apple has released a security report, things like that. You can only talk to Apple about it, and obviously you have to be the first person that finds the issue. But it's significant because for years Apple was criticized for the kind of lackluster bug bounty program or no bug bounty program that it found, that it had. It was sort of paled in comparison to lots of other places. Now, it looks to me like Apple is taking this seriously. I wrote a story the other day that the security firm Malwarebytes had found more and more threats on Apple devices. Obviously, as its technology develops, as it pushes it out quicker, as there's new to all these things, yield security problems, and there are more and more people with Apple devices, so it's a more attractive target and more people are affected by any issues. So it makes sense to me that Apple is really upping its game in the bug bounty field. The question is, and I know Brian has thoughts on this, is that enough to make hackers keep their white hat on? Is $1.5 million, $1 million enough?
Well, and that is a fun sort of intellectual rabbit hole to dive into, because think about who Apple's competitors are. Apple's competitors are, to a certain extent, the NSA here in the States, the National Security Agency. Probably the NSA's compatriot program in our agency in the UK. It is certainly the Soviets. I'm sorry, the Russians. It is certainly, I'm sure that was completely an accidental slip on my part. It is certainly the Chinese government. And it is also sophisticated criminal organizations. And when it comes to competing against governments, the governments are always going to be going to be able to pay more, and about how Apple has essentially infinity money. And that's true. But can Apple pay $10 million in exploit? Yeah, probably. Could it pay $100 million in exploit? Yeah, but not for very long. And my point there is that whatever Apple pays, governments are going to, and they're going to be willing to pay more, especially the authoritarian states.
Yes.
So what is Apple's point here? Is this just a rat race? Is this just a kind of thing where, you know, Apple raises what it pays and then the governments raise what they pay? And yeah, that's probably going to happen. But the thing is, I think that at these levels, it becomes a much easier decision for white hats to keep their white hat on. Yeah, maybe they could get more money by dealing with a shady company like Cellebrite in Israel. Maybe they could get more money from the Soviets, LOL, Russians. Maybe they could get more money from the Chinese. But $1 million is a lot of money.
Yes.
And a lot of people might be happy getting that $1 million for doing the right thing. And
yeah.
And I think that that's, I think that that's important.
I think that's right. I think that we've learned that even with silly things like content streaming and privacy, if you give people at a fair price legitimate ways to do things online, they tend to do it and make it simple to do. Apple has improved the system for reporting bugs, as I understand it. It's obviously significantly increased the money. So people will put, look, there are always going to be, we know this, black hat hackers online who are going to make, want to use exploits for wrong. We know this. This is, that's just the reality.
And but find exploits for wrong.
Right, exactly, exactly. But if you give most people a fair price for doing the right thing, I think most people will be tempted to do that.
I think that's sort of what I'm hoping, you know, because we did hear for a while, like, Apple wasn't paying what others were paying. And that was sometimes why this stuff was just sort of being released instead of reported to Apple and, you know, waiting to get it resolved. And that's where some of these exploits come from. And I like the idea that it's more appealing to do the right thing than to just go sell it to the highest bidder somewhere else. So,
yeah, and let's be clear as well, the prices, this kind of £1 million, if you find a flaw with something that's in public already, apparently that is akin to what is offered by the likes of Google and Microsoft. So Apple is now competing at the kind of market rate, if you like, you know, for amongst legitimate companies. It's worth exploring possibly what the sort of black market is offering, but all these big tech companies obviously feel comfortable that they're operating in kind of the right ballpark.
I'm hoping that this will change some of this, and that more people will go do it. And I sort of hope that people who find them and get paid for it kind of make a big deal about it. Like, once it's fixed, you know, hey, I reported this to Apple, and, you know, Ed McMahon showed up with a giant check. You know, that was a joke basically for Brian. Charlotte has no idea what I'm talking about. anyway. well, that's going to do it for us for today. We're going to head into the weekend on a high note of Apple giving out money. Like, it's Christmas time, right? So I want to thank.
But it is Christmas time, Kelly.
I know. The holiday my house is currently celebrating is Star Wars time, so I'm sure we'll get to Christmas eventually. But I want to thank both of you for being here. Charlotte, thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy New Year to all our listeners. I'll probably be back in 2020. New decade. Thanks for having us in 2019.
Of course. And Brian Chaffin, thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having us, Kelly. Happy Christmas to all and sundry, and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and Festivus.
And Boxing Day.
I don't know. We're probably getting near to some kind of solstice event. Anyway, yeah. Happy holidays to everyone.
Nice holidays. Thanks for having me,
Kelly. Happy things to all. Happy all the things to all the people. Whatever it is that you're celebrating, I hope that it's really good for you. And we will see you Monday next week, and then we'll be out until after Christmas. So I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.